Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
So we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But
yes, we did. We started to burn many things we found. That's the wonderful Dar Williams once again singing the Solartopia song for us here at the Solartopia Green Power. And we're on the show. This is a Monday show, a pre-taping, but we are talking. This is a celebration show. We are celebrating the shutdown, the permanent shutdown of the San Onofre nuclear plant units 2 and 3. Unit 1 has been long gone since the 1990s. We are on with four great guests. We're going to have a full hour just to relish this victory, talk about all the victories with Scott Denman, who is a true veteran of this movement from the previous century, from the Safe Energy Communication Council. Scott, you with us?
I'm with you.
All right, wonderful. And Roger Haride from Southern California. Roger, are you there?
Yeah, Northern California.
Yes. Oh, you're in Northern California. You're a Yankee. And then we have Ace Hoffman and Myra Reeson from Southern California. Myra and Ace, you're with us?
I'm here.
Yep. All right. We're going to have a great time today. This is a pure enjoyment show. We're going to talk history. We're going to talk about victories by grassroots movements. We're going to talk about the specifics of the shutdown of the San Onofre nuclear plant. This is something really a rare moment. We won't have another show like this until we shut Diablo Canyon, maybe Vermont Yankee Indian Point, one of those many, many reactors that's still out there. Scott Denman, I'd like to start just a little bit with you, and then we'll come back to you later in the show for more in-depth history. But I want to say that I remember in 1989, that I was at a rally at Seabrook, New Hampshire, and you got up and spoke, and you said that there was a referendum coming up and that we were going to win and that this referendum was going to shut down the Rancho Seco nuclear plant. And you did. You were right. We won the referendum, and by God, the reactor shut. And here we are in 2013 talking about two reactors now permanently shut down at San Onofre. But give us a bookend on this. What happened at Rancho Seco, and what are the parallels here with San Onofre?
Well, you know, it's always nice to be prescient, and in one of those
circumstances,
there were a lot of tea leaves that if you read them properly, you could see that the economics of the Rancho Seco reactor were not going to withstand the media blitz of the industry to keep it alive. And I think that's the Achilles heel of nuclear power has always been economics. The soul of it is corrupted completely because it produces plutonium, you know, named after the Greek god of hell. And we've got the potential for tremendous catastrophes, as we've seen with Chernobyl and now Fukushima. So it's that Achilles heel, the economic Achilles heel, which is going to bring these things down before their licenses or their extended licenses expire. And it's really the solar revolution that you've been talking about for years, and we've all been working on for, what is it now, about four decades.
Yeah, 30 years for me.
Yeah, that is going to bring this about. And we all have been saying for years that these reactors are not financially viable unless they're propped up artificially by forced by the ratepayers and then through subsidies by the federal government. And that's what's proving to be the case.
Rancho Seco, it was owned by the city of Sacramento.
So this was a municipal-owned nuclear plant.
Yeah, so there's some things that are different, and it's one reason why there wasn't a, you know, at the time I said this was a shot heard round the world, and indeed it was heard round the world, but unlike the revolution, it didn't start a domino effect then. And that was one of the reasons, because most of these reactors are owned privately, and you just don't have the handle to go back to the people and get some common sense instruction as to whether to keep them open or to close them in favor of cheaper, safer, and cleaner alternatives.
Well, this was, to date, however, I believe this is the only reactor, the Rancho Seco in Sacramento, shut in on June 5th, 1989, just about exactly, 14 years ago.
That's right.
This is, to date, I think, the only one that was shut with a direct public vote. Is that correct?
That's right. And there were probably, in the 1980s, 1990s, there were probably somewhere in the order of, 16 or 17 referenda around the country. And in each case, the opponents started out, the polling was done, in each case, the opponents started out with 60% of the vote or better. And when the industry got done with its advertising and using PR firms from Wall Street and so forth and pumping millions of dollars into each campaign to defeat them, the only one that that actually worked, the only campaign that was successful, was the Rancho Seco reactor campaign.
Amazing enough, the public voted to shut it down, and by God, the next day it was shut. Can you imagine? What a concept. And it remains shut. And actually, that's the only nuclear plant I've ever been in. I went to Sacramento and went inside it. I would never go in one that's operating. But there is a famous photograph, a wonderful photograph, of solar panels, which were installed at Rancho Seco, as you'll recall, everyone, as a demonstration project or an experiment. And those solar panels are still operating, and the reactor's been shut for, 15 years, right?
That's right. It's a great, well, actually more than 15 years, but it's more like almost 25 years.
Oh, yeah, that's
And it's a great juxtaposition, you know, the cooling tower in the background and then in the foreground, those solar panels. You know, we used that for the cover of a book that we co-produced at the Safe Energy Communication Council with Ed Smeloff and Peter Asmuth, the writer. Ed, as you'll recall, was the leader on the board, the elected board member of the Sacramento Municipal Utility District that he pushed through a blue ribbon commission to study the economics of the reactor and gained tremendous credibility for the case to shut it down because there were cheaper alternatives given all the problems that it had. So it's, you know, it's one of these things. It's one step at a time. We've had a lot of visionary and solid economics behind the argument to shift to renewables and extensive efficiency use. But the powers that be, as we all know, it takes a long time to get it done.
Yeah.
I think, go ahead.
It's amazing there's a quarter century gap between the shutdown of Rancho Seco and now the shutdown of San Onofre.
Right. There have been, of course, some closures in the interim. Just this year is kind of a watershed year for the movement for sustainable energy because Kewaunee in Wisconsin has been shut down by Dominion Power. It's not economic. And then Crystal River, you know, the folks down in Florida decided they would try to repair their own reactor and save some money, and they ended up putting a huge crack in the containment vessel. And as a result, they ultimately, Duke Energy, after it bought the plant, decided that, no, in fact, it was not economic to try to move it back into productive mode. So we've had some instances lately where these reactors, again, as we have been predicting all along, are aging prematurely, and they're developing problems that require tremendous investment. And as a result, it's more economic in many cases to shut them down. Two other things, Harvey, I think are critical in terms of trends as we look back on this. And you and I have been getting a lot of gray hair in this movement for a long time. But one of them is the trend toward the termination of new reactors. We've had this year the two at Sharon Harris in South Carolina. Those two reactors have been canceled. And we just had, you know, the most prolific capitalist in the world, Warren Buffett, make the choice in Iowa, as he did last year in Idaho, not to move forward with new reactors. And that's really profound when you have somebody like Warren Buffett who's investing instead in wind and in California in solar and making the decision not to move forward with a nuclear reactor that he's had on the books and has been pushing in the state legislature of Iowa now for 3 years.
So right. We're talking with Scott Denman here from the Safe Energy Communication Council, long gone, but a very important, influential operation back in the earlier days of the anti-nuclear movement. We have Roger Faraday's Hoffman and Milo Reason on hold for a minute here, but I want to point out that, you know, it's pretty amazing that you said that 25 years ago, when push came to shove, the voters of Sacramento decided that alternative energy was cheaper than continuing to operate their Rancho Seco reactor,
right,
and they shut it down. But that was 25 years ago.
25 years ago till today, enormous progress in the solartopian technologies and renewables, wind, solar especially, but biofuels now, especially, you know, I think biofuels are going to take a huge leap forward in the next couple of years with the legalization of hemp. We have a situation in Kentucky now where Mitch McConnell and Rand Paul are both advocating the legalization of industrial hemp. So I think hemp is going to be a major player in the biofuels industry. Roger, in Northern California, mm-hmm. I want to get to Ace in a minute. Ace, you've written an excellent piece on the radioactive waste at San Onofre. Roger, give us your hint. You've been working really hard on this for a long, long time. I hate it in sports events when announcers ask their, you know, the winning team, well, how do you feel? But, Roger, how do you feel about San Onofre being shut down?
Well, first off, I think it's probably the most important closure in the country's history, reactors at this point, you know, simply because it represents what I would suggest the saving of Southern California from a possible meltdown on the same level as Fukushima, you know, primarily because the media in Southern California has done such a piss poor job at documenting and detailing the dangers of a 150 year overdue earthquake on the San Andreas that could literally take us into an event worse than Fukushima, simply because the reactors are so much closer to Los Angeles and San Diego, essentially upwind of Orange County, a $1 trillion economy that could be destroyed, as well as the much bigger battle in the United States. This is just an awesome event that took place, and of course Ace and the folks down in Southern California that took this on the chin and worked so hard to be congratulated, because without them, the reactors would be on today. It's just the fact of the matter that SoCal Edison was just doing everything in its power. But we, you know, people had them tied down by their wonderful work bringing out the city council battles and, you know, eventually even dragging the LA Times into the issue, even though they really didn't want to talk about the story for quite a while. That's,
yeah,
to me, is incredible. I think it's, you know, like I said, this is just incredibly important. I'm sure hoping that we can do the same thing in New York City. The battle there is just ongoing. Just, you know, this is tough like Scott said, they just throw so much money, and the media just spins everything away. You just don't know what the real story is unless you're talking to activists these days. And that's probably the hardest part about this, because, you know, from the New York Times coverage here, I mean, back in New York, you wouldn't almost know that there was such a big battle going on.
That's for sure. Ace Hoffman, you've been at the on the battle lines right in the front in Southern California on San Onofre for a long, long time. I'll ask you what they asked of the, LeBron James when he wins the title, although he may not do it this year. How do you feel?
I feel like going to Disneyland.
All right.
Yeah,
is that what the anti-nuclear activists do when they won? They go to Disneyland.
I think we go to the Common Ground Fair up here in Maine.
There you go. So what do you think, Ace? This is actually pretty much a surprise. The timing of this caught a lot of us unawares. Why do you think Edison did it now?
Oh, I have no idea, considering that last week wasn't I on saying I didn't see any chance of them giving up anytime soon? So I'm still kind of recovering from, wow, they did it. This is amazing.
All right, so what? Speculate for us. Why do you think they did this right now? What prompted this announcement on June 7th, 2013, as opposed to December 7th, 2013?
It could be anything. The most recent event was on Tuesday. The most recent big event was the meeting on Tuesday with Naoto Kan and Gregory Yasko and Arne Gundersen and Peter Bradford that we talked about. And it was just a phenomenal event. And it made a solid case that this is a danger we don't want to face. A meltdown is something that is too tragic to be comprehensible. And here we have these two reactors that are broken, as Arne Gundersen explained, and the case is just so crystal clear. There's nothing Edison could do. We boxed them into a corner through their own failures. And I think a lot of reactors could do the same thing if the citizens could only give it a shot. And could. We are the most organized group of citizens I could imagine having. And, you know, so whenever Edison made a mistake, first the citizens pounced on it, then next thing you know, the whistleblowers are giving the information to all the media around here. And they may do a piss-poor job of a lot of things, but they started to pick up on the whistleblowers coming at them and giving them information time and time again, from month after month, while these reactors are shut down.
I'd agree. The Southern California media outside of the Times were awesome, just incredible the last few years.
How do you mean? Be a little more explicit about that. You're saying the media...
The amount of coverage from San Diego up through Orange County in the papers there were just almost routine, regular. You know, the Times, where it was okay, but it were the local papers that really took the stories of the city council meetings, and like I said, just these events, you know, that were not going to get covered by the Times nearly as well, simply because they were such a big paper. But the regional smaller papers across Orange County and San Diego really took a good job of doing it. And even one of the, you know, the local TV stations in San Diego got caught up in the battle extensively, as they started finding that San Diego doesn't know how to play public relations very well, or assumably Southern California Edison.
Harvey,
how do we, Scott Devin, you're a media expert. How do we duplicate this in other areas? I have to agree. I followed the with Roger and Ace and Milo, if she's back on. Milo, are you back on?
I am.
No. Oh, you are. Good. You know, we did have tremendous local media coverage in Southern California on San Onofre. It was really impressive.
I think there are a couple of key items that you need to look at behind the scenes as well on this one. One, you had a rather unusual circumstance with the operator itself and these faulty tubes, the replacement tubes and so forth that Mitsubishi provided. Then you had Senator Barbara Boxer, who played a key role in providing insight into that process. And that insight found that there may have been some either collusion, or there was some you know, sweeping under the rug of some of the facts that were occurring, some of the issues that were being brought up, that the utility really didn't want either the PUC or the citizens to know about. And as a result of that, that spurred more interest in the media. And then on top of that, you had an aggressive legal campaign being waged, particularly by Friends of the Earth. And that, in combination with a tremendous long-term and continual focus that the grassroots groups in California have been providing, I think it was a combination of those things that brought this to a head. And when the industry and when the NRC indicated that it wasn't going to move forward with a provisional license to operate at the 70% power level, then the company really was in a no-win situation in terms of its economic viability, and its hands were pretty much tied, I think.
Well, thanks for that, Scott. My reason you haven't spoken yet, I'm going to ask you what I asked Ace and Roger. How do you feel about the shutdown? What's your reaction?
Well, you know, I was down here in San Clemente yesterday morning, and fortunate enough to be staying in Donna Gilmore's house with Arnie Gunderson and Kendra Ulrich and Sean Burney. And so what a moment to share with these all of these people so dedicated towards this end. And it was surprising and elating, and just we were all overjoyed, and we went almost immediately. The press started contacting us, and we went down to the plant, and for hours and hours, more and more members of the media showed up with their cameras, and there were interviews going on, and it was really just accelerating, and more activists showed up, and so we had just a wonderful, joyous, celebratory day. But I have to agree with Ace. You know, I mean, there was a cumulative effort. There was so much effort from so many different directions, and a lot of that has been stated, but this event last Tuesday with Naoto Kan and Gregory Yasko and Bradford and Arnie Gunderson was really important. I felt that Prime Minister Kan, he was quite extraordinary. I don't know how many people know this about him, but a lot of people in Japan are really angry with him because he promoted nuclear power, and he said that he was just really profoundly, he was contrite and pretty much communicated that he wants to spend his life now helping people to understand how dangerous nuclear power is and to promote renewables. And he's a remarkable man. He's really a leader. And I felt like I was a witness to a historic turning point in history. It gave me such a lift to be there in that room last Tuesday. I felt like something was really, really changing, something major for the entire planet. I mean, his goal is to travel the world and to help people to understand that we don't need nuclear power, that nuclear power is much too dangerous, and that we have these wonderful abundant, renewable natural sources, and that we simply don't have to continue to take these horrendous, dangerous risks with nuclear.
Well, that's amazing. Is there a fully available, a full record that we could post online of that meeting? We're talking about
the
meeting that occurred in the San Diego City Council Chambers. Is that correct?
That is right. Yes.
It was Naoto Kan, former Prime Minister of Japan, and Gregory Yasko, the former chair of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, Arnie Gunderson, the wonderful nuclear engineer from Fair Winds, and Peter Bradford, a former commissioner of the NRC, all of them talking about how long of nuclear power. How long did it go on, Myla?
Well, it was, let me think. It started around 8:30 and went on past noon. So about four, I think it was roughly 4 hours. And just so rich in content. And so it was, there was a Q&A. I'm trying to remember if it was actually 4.5 hours, but I believe that, close to 4 hours.
And does anyone have a URL that
yes.
we can post?
Yes. I will send you the link, but there's a man named Ray Lutz who has a website called Citizens Oversight, and he videotaped the entire event, and he posted all of the video on his website. And I know that ACE did a really great distillation of the most important points that that Gregory Yasko made, and ACE posted that on YouTube. And
I've also done that for Arne Gundersen.
Oh, good. So I'll post those links. I'll post those links to nukefree.org, and we'll have that available. So maybe is there a way we can take this show on the road and take it into New York City, for example, and get Indian Point shut? I mean, is it at all possible that somebody from Edison was hiding in the room and came to their senses and said, "Hey, this is enough. We got to shut this down."
As a matter of fact, there was professional nuclear engineer who got up during the Q&A and declared that he had come to the meeting, although he knew there were problems with San Onofre. He was definitely at the beginning of the meeting still in favor of nuclear power, and this had completely turned him around.
He was the best part. It was amazing.
The visionary who pulled this together and worked on it for 2 months to make this gathering happen was Torgan Johnson, and at some point I really hope that you will have him on to talk about how he pulled this off, because I just think that the whole entire planet owes him a huge thank you for this extraordinary vision that he had to bring these people together. And you know, his motivation really was he was feeling a great sense of frustration because on the one hand, we managed to get really good local press, but it just never really felt like it was quite enough because Edison seemed so determined and the system seemed so rigged, and he thought if we could only bring these people together that maybe we can get the media attention that would help to raise awareness so that more than just a few, a small percentage of the population is aware of this tremendous risk. And he really, that his goal was first and foremost to really raise awareness and to educate people.
Well, it's interesting, I've spent a lot of my career in the anti-nuclear movement working with rock and roll and with some truly great people, Bonnie Raitt, Jackson Brown, Graham Nash, and we've done these high-profile mega concerts, and everybody wants to have a big concert to turn things around, and they certainly have had an enormous impact from the No Nukes, well, even from before the No Nukes concerts of 79. We had a No Nukes concert in Sunnyvale 2 years ago in August, but here we're talking about an event in the basement of a county courthouse. I guess a couple hundred people showed up, but I certainly sense the power of that event. Scott, in your long career doing media, can you think of a similar event with these four guys coming together?
No, I think this is one of those times when, the stars crossed in our favor and we were able to get them. We've been actually trying to get Khan over to the United States for 2 years. And been working with Physicians for Social Responsibility and Friends of the Earth extensively on that. So it was great that Torgan was able to break through and make this happen. And looking to the future, we not only want to have Khan do a repeat performance in other parts of the country, but we also have the English version of the Funabashi report coming up. This is Funabashi, who was the editor of Asahi Shimbun, which is the largest English newspaper in Japan. And he set his own independent commission up, Blue Ribbon Commission. And that one has gotten tremendous play when the results came out, showing the collusion between the nuclear industry, the Japanese government, and the utility. And there are tremendous lessons that our government and the NRC have turned a blind eye to. And so when this report is published in English, which is going to be the end of the year, we are looking to have an extensive effort to have Mr. Funabashi and that report taken around the country and given a wide audience, as wide as possible, given what it has to say and the lessons that we should be learning from Fukushima.
Great. Look, I hear some music in the background. Let's take a short break. We've been talking with Scott Demme, Ace Hoffman, and Roger Harrod, and Myra Reason. Take a short break here, and we'll be right back after these messages.
Oil refineries, pipelines, mega dams. Iran, Iraq, Russia, Nigeria, Venezuela, Kurdistan. Oil spill, meltdown, flooding, suburbia, mudslide, traffic jam. Road rage, asthma, famine, leukemia, it's time to get a better plan. Solar Topia is home sweet home to me.
Okay, we are back at the Solartopia Green Power Wellness Show. We're having a celebratory celebration here with celebrities from the anti-nuclear movement who are just time-honored, wonderful, effective, fantastic activists who have just helped with one of the great historic moments, I think, in the survival of the human race, not that it was the case, but we have just shut permanently two reactors at the San Onofre nuclear site. These are big nuclear power plants. They are in between Los Angeles and San Diego. They have been shut since January of last year, but they will now never reopen. I have just posted the official statement from Southern California Edison, the primary owner. The only good thing about these nuclear plants was that back when Richard Nixon was at San Clemente, at least he's got some of the dose, but that wasn't anywhere near enough to justify their continuing operations. So I want to talk about the significance of this. Scott, you and I were working together back in the late 80s, early 90s. From, I think, around 1987 until 1991, we shut six reactors
mm-hmm.
in the country, Trojan in Oregon,
right.
Yankee Row in Massachusetts, Shoreham on Long Island. What other ones? There were three others. That
well,
we
there's
shut.
Rancho Seco.
Rancho Seco, yeah. Of course, which we talked about.
And there's Fort St. Vrain, the Colorado reactor that was a high-temperature gas-cooled reactor.
And there was one
Indian.
Other.
You know, in 88, or I believe it was 89, Rocky Flats was shut.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, but yeah. That,
but I know that's a whole other area, but still, it's nuclear.
Yeah, there was one other commercial reactor that shut in O'Connor.
Well,
right
Milltown
after
up in northern
Millstone
Michigan.
Millstone
1 closed in 88.
Which one?
Millstone 1.
Millstone 1, yes.
Yep.
I have to say, whoever named these plants, we owe him a great debt. There's Millstone, Turkey Point, one of my favorites, and, of course, Trojan. But now San Onofre, and by the way, if anybody can tell me, who was Saint Onofre? I never heard of him. And the patron saint of bad nuclear plants, I guess. But at any rate, this is a great historic significance. We don't I don't think an operating, when's the last operating reactor to shut private San Onofre? We have Kewaunee and Crystal River.
Right.
But I think it's been quite a while since an operating reactor has been shut.
Well, Maine Yankee was shut down in 1996.
Okay.
And we also had Haddam Neck shut down in 1996. And then Big Rock Point, which was only 67 megawatts, but that was 97.
And
that was in Michigan.
Yeah, and then Zion 1 and 2, and those were combined, 3,250 megawatts, so huge plant. Those were shut down in 97 and 96. So,
okay, since then, I think these are the first of the new century to shut. We've been stuck in 104 for quite a while.
Yeah.
And one of the significant things also, just numerically, of the shutdown of San Jose is it takes us down to 100. We had Kewaunee and Crystal River, as you mentioned, Scott, go down this year already, and now we're at 4 for the year. We certainly have Vermont Yankee, Indian Point, maybe Pilgrim right on the brink. Are there any others we think might shut down in this year, in 2013?
Well, you've got, pay attention to the Midwest, because as Business Week reported in March, wind and gas are pummeling nuclear and coal in the Midwest, but particularly nuclear. They just can't. The price is dropping through the PMJ, the power pool there. Pricing is dropping dramatically, and it's very difficult for them to continue to justify the Clinton reactor at Exelon. Exelon is the owner of that one. So that's one to watch. Another one to watch has problems. Remember, right after Fukushima, we had Fort Calhoun in Nebraska surrounded by water and just barely survived flooding there. That's another one that's on the margin to look at. And I think Turkey Point is also one that bears watching. So they're probably, somewhere in the order of a half a dozen to a dozen reactors that, because of mechanical maintenance problems and heightened costs there, and also because of the lack of competitiveness with so much wind in the upper Midwest, there are reactors like those that are just, they can't cut it economically.
So also there's a lot of international news on it. Just a brief, Gentelli just across the border in Canada was shut down last year, and of course Germany, and there are big battles all over the world that are being censored, from Taiwan, Turkey, South Africa, you name it, they've been trying to push these. Two in Russia were just shut down here 2 weeks ago. This is a really monumental point in time. I'm hoping this news, of course, of San Onofre will spread worldwide, even though, believe it or not, it was not in the news up here in the Bay Area yesterday at all. No media coverage at all.
That's astounding. Let me say one thing before we let it go slip by. I mean, Scott, you said something that could not have been said 10 years ago, which is that we have significant wind power capabilities in the Midwest and elsewhere. And, of course, you're in Maine, and Maine just launched the first major windmill to go into the ocean without being moored, without posts going into the ocean floor. This is a big deal. But
plan is still forthcoming. It hasn't been launched just yet. But it's coming.
Okay. Well, it got a lot of news coverage. I mean, a lot of people think it's ready. That was my impression. But at any rate, you said kind of matter-of-factly that wind in the Midwest is pummeling nuclear power now. You could have said that maybe about gas 10 years ago, but wind power really has just come online in a big way within the last decade, to where it's a significant player that we take for granted now. Certainly, wind in Southern California, but even more so now solar, had to be a factor in the future plans of San Onofre. Somebody at Edison, I'm sure, was pointing out that, hey, look, guys, PV, if we spend another billion or so dollars trying to upgrade in 5 years trying to upgrade San Onofre, we're going to be way behind the curve in the real world. We're not talking about, a solartopian fictional vision. We're talking about a real solartopian vision that has tangible dollars and cents behind it. I mean, Warren Buffett, as you mentioned, Scott, is heavily invested in both solar and wind power.
And so he is, and right there in Southern California, in L.A. and Kearns County, Buffett is invested heavily in the new SunPower, Southern California Edison solar utility, solar unit. And that, the beauty about this, there's probably one guy, and you should get him on your show soon, there's probably one guy who deserves a lot of credit on this, but actually has been out there making this happen, and that's Ed Smeloff. And you'll remember he was the member of the board of the elected board of the Sacramento Municipal Utility District, who formed the Blue Ribbon Economic Committee to look into Rancho Seco, and then he led the campaign along with campaign for Economic Democracy, Tom Hayden's group, and Sacramentans for Safe Energy. He led that campaign to close Rancho Seco, and now he works for SunPower, and he is the utility executive who works to install utility-grade solar, and he was the one who put that deal together with Southern California Edison, and then Warren Buffett bought into it to put a 500 megawatts of electric solar right where it's needed. And that's the beauty of solar and wind. More and more, you can put it up quickly. It's decentralized, so you can put it where the need is.
Wow, more jobs.
The cost, you're not risking an arm and a leg with the cost, because it's, you know, each unit can be put up as almost needed. So this is something that's happening everywhere that I think is wonderful. And I don't know if it was Ace who just mentioned what's going on in Germany. I think that that's probably the pivotal point when Germany can say, look, we did it. That is one of the biggest economies in the world, along with California. And I think that's going to be really the watershed moment where even the new nuclear power plants are have their back turned on them.
Well, including right. China, too, folks. You've got to understand that we're now blocking solar panels from China because they're too cheap.
Yeah.
That's just astonishing.
Yeah. It really is. You're
well,
right.
Well, Myla and Ace, you are Edison ratepayers. Do you think that Edison is going to be jumping into solar and wind in a big way here? I mean, is it possible that somebody in the Edison financial department looked at the numbers and said, hey, San Onofre is just not worth the money. Let's go with solar and wind.
Well, I'm a San Diego Gas and Electric customer myself, actually.
And I'm in LADWP.
Oh, both of you.
So both of us, both Ace and I, are actually lucky not to be Edison ratepayers, because Edison ratepayers may be paying the highest electrical rates in the country. I know they're really high. I saw something in the paper the other day about how San Diego Gas and Electric is actually about to dramatically increase their rates, and that was before the announcement of the shutdown of San Onofre. Now, San Diego Gas and Electric only has a relatively small interest in San Onofre compared to Edison's.
Do you think Edison? You know, Edison once had.
Edison. Edison Institute, which is associated with Edison, put out a position paper recently where they were really fearing solar because they didn't feel that they could reap the kind of profits from solar that they can from nuclear, and that's partly because of these feed-in tariffs and the ability that people have to own their own solar. So they're really fearing distributed power, and the problem is that maybe that what they, you know, they need to invest in perhaps some kind of manufacturing aspect of it, because you know that if they were really smart about business, that they would find, you know, they would be enterprising enough to actually figure out ways that they could generate great amounts of money by doing the right thing instead of by this psychotic need to make money by risking the lives of millions of people.
I think there's also another model here up here in Northern California, as well as San Diego's now, the community choice programs that were brutally fought by the state's utilities a few years ago with Prop 16, where we now have the capacity for local communities to break from the utility companies and produce power from their own sources. So we have Marin County now literally almost 100% renewables at this point as a result of the battles going on here.
the resources that are coming forward are just astonishing. And I think California is definitely setting the trend and will continue to do so with its historic capacity to seismically shock these utility companies into changes.
Ace Hoffman, what do you think? Is Edison and your own San Diego utility, are they going to be jumping into solar as a result of this?
Oh, I think that they're looking that way. San Diego Gas and Electric has been very good about promoting. They've got, you know, there's rate issues and there's feed-in tariff issues. But they have a wonderful science center where you can learn all kinds of information. They give seminars and everything else. And I have yet to find one word, and now I don't think I ever will, about nuclear power at San Diego Gas and Electric's own center on energy solutions. But they are always having seminars on how to install solar and how to make your house more efficient and things like that. I think they saw the writing on the wall. And as for Edison, well, this is, doesn't seem to me to be the right time to be knocking them since they've made such a wonderful decision here. And, in fact, I went and visited their electric vehicle Twitter feed, and it's full of interesting connections. They look like a completely different person from the nuclear people that we've been seeing, who have been worthy opponents and properly behaved, but on the wrong side of a very important issue.
Well, as you recall, especially Scott, a fellow old-timer in this, Edison once had a president named John Bryson, who came from NRDC, advertising himself as the guy who was going to take Edison green, and boy, was he a disappointment. But now that Santa Oakley's gone, it's going to be very, very interesting to see what Southern California Edison does in terms of renewables. I mean, David has really, set the tone at the LADWP for moving into renewables on a utility scale, as he did in Sacramento. What are we thinking? Who wants to make some predictions here?
Well, I'd like to say, if I might, the state of California has a big pot of money for the implementation of alternative energy, and so far, the CPUC has given the utilities, they put the utilities in charge of the implementation of that program, and I don't really think that they would be nearly as effective in terms of implementation as would some kind of consortium of private, I don't know exactly how to put it, but Barbara George has a lot of really good ideas about how to implement this to really move forward rapidly with renewables. But the fact that the implementation is in the hands of the utilities is somewhat troubling to me.
Right. I mean, the CEC is also a major point here. They do semi-annual, two-year reports, if you will, on the state of California's energy supply system. They're currently going through another cycle of workshops. And if you monitor the workshops at all, which most people don't do, about 85% of this has to do with working with renewable energy at this point. And so they're wonderful, but like Myla said, PUC seems to have the purse strings on where we're actually taking this, the cash flows. And with Michael Peavy, the former president of SoCal Edison, sitting at the top of this, we've got a real problem, because Governor Brown will not get rid of him, even though we've got some new really hot poop on the San Bruno fire, natural gas fire here this week, with all the lawyers resigning and be reassigned at the PUC over PV's handling of that case. We're certainly hoping that there could be more pressure to get rid of PV, because he is really a major problem with this issue.
Harvey, I agree that California is really going to play a pivotal role. There's no doubt about it. Has some of the most progressive laws on the books, and certainly, as we've heard today, the most progressive thinkers in terms of sheer sustainable economics. And so I think California is going to be an extremely important role model for not only us and the rest of the United States, but also around the world. I would say, by the way, I just came back from India, and the reason why I thought the turban hadn't been put up off of Maine shores, because it hadn't until 4 days ago, but Forbes now has said, indeed, you're right, that DOE has put up the first grid-connected offshore floating wind turbine, and the estimate on power that we have just in offshore wind alone is 4,000 gigawatts, and that's about four times our current generating capacity for the entire United States. So when we think about that and think about the opportunity to tap into that, let alone solar and biomass, as you were talking about, we have almost unlimited potential here. And I'm not going to go so far as to say that it's going to be too cheap to meter and make that mistake, but it is, on the long run, going to be much, much cheaper than nuclear power. And certainly when you consider all the externalities, from waste to accidents to terrorism threat and so forth.
And it'll be much more likely to happen if we also close Diablo Canyon.
Amen.
Yes. Now, those Californians, and I have to interject here that I do want to let people know that San Luis Obispo County has a really lovely little county jail. The food's not great, but, you know, when you go with your friends, it can be a lot of fun, as I did in 1984. Three lovely nights there. I haven't been back, but, you know, it's about time. And I want to point out on wind, by the way, that in 1975, we held a Tour Tomorrow Fair at Amherst College in the midst of our early battles against the Montague nuclear plant, which we did win, and Montague was never built. And William Hieronymus, the professor, I guess in the engineering department at UMass, said and presented drawings of windmills that could be out in the ocean, and they were not anchored. They were not based on pillars going into the ground. They were, in fact, floating. And people kind of laughed at that, and, you know, they're just going to twist around and around. But here we are with the launch of a very substantial, it's a prototype, I think. Well, actually, it's technically not a prototype, but it really means it's smaller than what people are saying. And people are talking now about 5 megawatt units, which is what he was talking about in 1975. And as Scott has pointed out, there is, you know, not only offshore in the oceans, but very much in the Great Lakes, especially Lake Erie, which is close to, you know, Detroit, Cleveland, Buffalo, and Toronto. We have Toronto's on Huron, but that whole north coast of Ohio and of Michigan there, they can get their power also western New York State from these in the lakes. This is really the dawn of a new era here. And I wonder, we should probably start a poll, or rather a raffle, a lottery, and find out who can guess when the first big offshore windmills are going to be visible from the San Onofre nuclear site. What do you think? I'm giving it 3-4 years at the most.
Sounds about right to me.
So we're talking, I wouldn't bet against that.
No.
I can see,
we're talking
here
with four great people. Myla, what were you saying?
Oh, I said I can see. You painted a great image. I could see it in my mind's eye.
Right. Of course, the skeptics will turn around and say, well, you guys didn't want those offshore rigs in Santa Barbara, and now you want windmills. And I'm going to say, yes, as a matter of fact, we do. And I like looking at windmills, and I don't like looking at oil rigs. We're talking with Scott Denman, formerly of the Safe Energy Communication Council. Scott, what's your current affiliation? Is there a website you're involved with?
Well, I'm kind of working behind the scenes these days as a consultant and advisor to a number of organizations, and also to philanthropists who are interested in getting into this arena as they see the essential shift in dealing with real climate change issues, shifting into sustainable energy. So that's more of my role these days.
Roger Haride, you do a lot of research. You post stuff online. Is there a website you're
There's two. I'm the archivist for the Abilene Alliance, of course. We've been around for, we still have an office in San Francisco. It's archival. We have a website, energy-net.org. And then I'm also the
website manager for Nuclear Free California, which is one word, nuclearfreecal.org. So both
there
of those
go.
Are sites.
I was actually at the founding meeting of the Abalone Alliance. It was during one of the very few early Super Bowls that were any good. I'm sorry to miss it, but that was a great meeting of the Abalone Alliance. My reason, who are you with? Want to recommend the website?
Well, I would recommend both Friends of the Earth, FOE.org, because they really did contribute quite a lot, and Donna Gilmore's extraordinary resource for San Onofre, which is SanOnofreSafety.org. It's one of the most user-friendly, important websites for the movement, because she's really organized the information in an extremely user-friendly way, and it's an important website to model. I think it really shows us how to do it right.
All right, Ace Hoffman, how about you?
I don't know. Everybody seems to know where to find me, so just go to any of those other places and look. Nukefree.org is a good one to go to.
Thank you. That's nukefree.org, which I ran it. This has been one of the most enjoyable radio shows I've ever done. I hope you guys all enjoy it, have enjoyed it as much as I have. We'll have a sequel the next time a nuclear plant shuts down. Ace, you've also posted an excellent piece on what's going to happen with the radioactive waste at San Onofre. Certainly a question we'll have to deal with. Thank you so much to the staff at PRN for allowing this taping to proceed. And we will be back next week at the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show. And we'll have all these four wonderful people back to discuss the next nuclear shutdown, which I'm betting, by the way, will be Vermont Yankee. But we'll see what happens. Thank you so much, and no nukes. We'll see you in Solartopia.
Go solar.
All right, thanks.
The fuel ran scarce, the price jumped high, and so they gave nuclear power a try. But don't you know it got